You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning, happy Sunday. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson and Terry Recruitment. Every week, I am super fortunate that during this show, we share the stories, the expertise and knowledge of businesses, leaders, large and small, all across Oxfordshire with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. So on today's show, we're going to be talking about scaling the business, when to introduce a senior management team. And to do this, I'm going to be joined by Martin Sharkey of Cloud Cubed. I'm also joined by Daniel O'Sullivan of the Experience Specialist Group and Yasmin Biggs of Profit Ability. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming our three guests after this. Get Radio. Welcome back. This is Get Radio and this is Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. So let's start by introducing our three experts. Martin, do you want to go first? Can you introduce yourself and indeed Cloud Cubed?
Yeah, I can, Ben. Good morning, all. I'm Martin Sharkey. I'm the founder and chief executive officer of Cloud Cubed. Cloud Cubed is an IT consultancy organization. We were formed nicely on Star Wars Day for all you Star Wars fan out there. It was May the 4th in 2021. We deal largely with large-scale digital transformation. We work largely in the data space as well, so building data services for customers like the Home Office and MHRA and other big customers that we've got within our portfolio. We've been quite successful in terms of where we've come from. We'll talk a little bit about that in a while, but we're sitting around 70 heads at this point. Our base is in Oxfordshire and Witney, and our goal is to establish a technology hotspot or a technology hub within the area.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Daniel, your turn.
Thanks, Ben. So yeah, my name's Daniel. I'm the CEO of the Experience Specialist Group. One of our brands is Team Building Experiences, and we deliver team building events all over the UK. We have events like Betrayers, which is formed off of the local Traitors event. We also have Crystal Maze, Office Games, and a number of different experiences that we offer for our clients. I'm also the host on the We Built This Business podcast, where I interview different professionals from different industries that hear about their journey.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And Yasmin, last but not least.
Yeah, hi everyone. Nice to be on the show. I'm Yasmin, or Yas, sorry, Yas. It makes me sound like my mum's telling me off and it's Yasmin, but I'm from Profitability. I'm the chief of staff here, and we are a game-based learning business. And our mission is to bring our learning experiences to all corporate training. We don't believe in kind of chalk and talk didactic training, but we want people to learn by experimenting, by doing things with their colleagues. So it's really sociable, it's really engaging, it's super memorable. But the key difference really in what we do when we go into large organizations, we try to recreate the reality of the businesses that we're working with. And we deal in quite complex areas, such as kind of upskilling people in financial literacy, talent management, leadership development, and sustainable transformation.
Amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much. Yaz, I'm just going to stay with you, if that's okay, and ask you one of the three most tough questions this morning, which is the song choice. So no pressure. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I've just asked the rest of the team, and the song that we all boogie to on a Friday just before our team lunches is I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross. So that was their choice.
Oxfordshire Station. Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that wonderful song choice, definitely what we need on a Sunday. We heard from our three experts, Martin, Daniel and Yasmin. And today we're going to be talking about scaling a business. And when should you introduce that senior management team? So Martin, I'm going to start with you for the round table and really talk about, I guess, kind of the first part of that question, which is in terms of scaling the business. To grow to 70, I think there will be a lot of organisations across Oxfordshire and across the world who look at that and think, wow, that's huge growth. So if you can answer it in a question, how have you done it? And what have been kind of, I guess, the important milestones along the way?
It's a really good question, Ben, and one that's very complex in nature. So we've grown to this size with no investment whatsoever. So we've grown organically. We own our own company. We've got no investment externally. So we put off the decision to bring in executives into the business until we were at a point where we could sustain those salaries. They're a really strategic investment, and they're also quite costly to any business that wants to bring them in. So you have to do it at a point where you can sustain that model, but you also have to accept and acknowledge that there is a point where you have to bring that senior leadership in, because what you end up with is too many single points of failure within the business. And you, me being the brand of the company so far, I need to look for experts that are as good, if not 10 times better than me, at a very specific thing that I do very well already. So we had three false starts with hiring a CTO to replace me, because my background is very much technology focused. And that did not work. So even the waste of time and effort to try and go and hire people in, that's a big investment from the business as well. We are at a position where we've got a chief people officer, we've got a chief operating officer, we've got a chief revenue and commercial officer, and I've also got an MD. Now, that's only happened within the last 6 months, and that's because we've been incubating our business to a point where we could actually sustain that investment based on the growth that we got. So we've been quite fortunate to have been gifted and granted lots of really good contracts. And that's just because we've worked very hard at trying to secure those contracts. But we're now in a position where we can sustain that. But again, it's taken at least 3 years for us to be in a position where we could bring those senior hires into the business. And that's where we expect now to see greater growth. We've already achieved quadruple scale within the last 12 months. And we expect that trajectory to continue based on this new top tier investment that we got.
Amazing, amazing. And Daniel, I think one of the things I've always admired about you, and definitely not your choice of football team, I knew I was going to get that in at some point, has very much been that you run an events business. And during the pandemic, I think that a lot of businesses within the event sector were very much being risk averse and thinking, how do we scale down? And you did that COVID word, which was pivot. But you also said, do you know what, Ben, I'm going to scale. I'm going to grow. We're going to use this as our opportunity to get market share. Can you just share that story with those listening at home, and really kind of how did you achieve that?
So I guess I'll start with going into the pandemic. So March 2020, we had a full order book for the summer. All of our business kind of gets booked between January and March, and gets delivered between April and September. So the business, that was booked in had to all be cancelled, and we didn't have any business coming in for the foreseeable future. So the business went into a temporary period of hibernation. I continued working in the background just to try and clear up all of the administration that we could. And we got to about July, and I decided that, you know, this pandemic was going to be going on for a while, and, you know, our industry was getting people together, and the government's message was not to get together. So it was a very conflicting business model to have at the time. So we looked at creating our own virtual experiences for companies and set up a new platform to sell those experiences, which was our Team Building Experiences website. And within 2 months, we had got most of the team back from furlough. And then by the December of that year, we'd had a record number of events go away in December. It carried on for another year where we weren't allowed to deliver events in person. So we ended up scaling by being able to attract a global audience, essentially. So we were selling events to companies, not just in the UK, but in the US, the Far East, and all of Europe as well. So it enabled us to look differently at the model that we currently had, which is very UK focused, and also opened up new markets to us and provided an opportunity for us to increase our margins, because instead of outsourcing a lot of experiences, which is what we did previously, we were able to bring them in-house and create our own entertainment.
Mm-hmm. And Yaz, I know that you as an organization work with some really well-known global brands. What are the traits that you see across, whether it be a scaling business or a really successful business? And what are those, I guess, kind of foundations that you need to get into place?
I think the biggest traits, the traits that's most consistent across a lot of these successful businesses is investing in people. I think Martin touched on it when he was talking about bringing the right people at the right time. And I think knowing where you're at as an organization and making sure that you're bringing the right talent, but that you're also supporting them through the development process, and giving them experiences where they feel safe enough to try and do things a little bit differently. So giving them the conditions to succeed and to fail, but to fail in a safe way where they know that they can try and experiment and do things a little bit differently is really important. I think a lot of the large organizations that we work with, I think get things, I mean, we went through a very similar process to Daniel, like through COVID, like we were purely an analog training organization. So come March 2020, we equally lost all of our revenue overnight. And we went through exactly the same transformation process and pivoting to digital experiences. And we've done that really successfully for the last couple of years. We've had to invest really heavily in technology and our resource, bringing in the right talent. But what was a huge learning experience for us is that people really just want to be connected with other people. And you have to create those environments, whether it's within your organization and with the businesses that you're working with. So I think if you can connect the people, bring the right people in and giving them the right conditions to succeed, whether that's in your own organization or all the businesses that you're trying to work with, I think that's number one to success.
Absolutely. Martin, I think this comes very nicely back to your kind of, I guess, kind of first kind of line is the fact that you've grown organically and you've not got that, I guess, kind of investment, which I think is quite common within science and tech businesses, is to take a lot of funding. Has that impacted the team in terms of how the team work by, I guess, doing it organically? And have they worked in a different way, or have you employed people in a certain way because of that?
It's interesting. Yaz mentioned about focusing on people. I think the positive thing that I've taken from this, Ben, is that we have a very specific culture in CloudCubed, and it's something that seems to resonate with all of our people. It's small, business-minded, but also quite an open and safe place. It's very inclusive, and it seems to be something that our customers talk about around, you know, the CloudCubed experience, and there's some kind of special energy that's wrapped around it as well. So I think not having investment has avoided the large scale and bloated that you would experience with some big organizations. I worked on a lot of very large programs into the hundreds of millions, and you get a lot of money to go and spin a program up, and all of a sudden you've got 100 or 200 people on the ground within a couple of months. And that's really, really difficult to manage and coordinate. But I think when you grow something organically, you almost get them bought into the culture, the way of working, the way of thinking, which is really important as well. And that then precipitates across the rest of the organization. So I think for me, one of the important things is protecting the culture, making sure we don't dilute it. And that's the reason why we hired a chief people officer, because we could have just gone and hired a regular HR manager. But the difference between an HR manager and a chief people officer is the cultural impact that they have and the cultural compass that they bring with them to make sure that is disseminated across the rest of the organization and weaved into the fabric and culture of what CloudCubed are.
Absolutely. And I'm quite interesting, and it may be a question for you, Martin, or it may be something that Yaz or Dan, you want to touch on. It's just that, I guess, kind of equation of promote from within or hire externally the best you possibly can. What's been, I guess, when expanding, what has been the thought process in terms of the point where you do promote from within? Because I know that you're very big on internal promotions within your team, and the point where you see, do you know what, I've identified this space that we do need to go and hire the best person we possibly can, which could be external. So yeah, but a point for you, Martin, but also, yeah, as Daniel, by all means, do jump in.
I'll just pick up first. For me, Ben, one of the things I can't sacrifice on is quality. So So promotion for men will take a little bit of time for people to get up to speed, but I need to make sure that the people I bring into the business are at the top of their game. They're specialists in their field. You know, we work a lot with research institutes and we work with healthcare platforms. So we need to bring people in who are really knowledgeable about that service and that capability. But once they're in, they become a custodian of the capability and also help them to promote through some osmosis, some of the people within the business, so we can bring them up to speed. So as we're building the maturity within the organization, we're probably at a point where we can't afford to do too much internal promotion, but that will absolutely come. We've got strategic partnerships with the Research of Software Engineering and other programs that we're looking at exploring with Oxford University. But that's really where we're trying to look at focusing is a high quality resource delivering amazing outcomes for our customers with the view that longer term, we can then do the internal promotions.
Mm-hmm. What's your take, Yaz?
I think when it comes to bringing in some of that top tier management experience, I think it's super important, like Martin said, to kind of do your due diligence and ensure that you're bringing in the right people at the right level. And I think it's also about them fitting in with the culture that you've already grown, which obviously we've covered. I do think that with that experience, there does come a certain amount of pressure. So enable it, being in the right position to give them the time and space to do what you want them to do properly, I think is really important. And I think, but when you're looking at the other side of things, so when you're trying to grow your workforce generally, I think we have a bit of a mantra of like hire fast, but fire fast. Like if they're not the right fit and they're not getting to grips with things, when you're such a small business and every penny that you spend is being scrutinized and whether it's delivering that ROI, and also whether that person is getting the most from your business, like, are you really giving them the conditions to succeed? And if you're not, and they're not the right fit, but equally we're not the right fit for them, then letting them go quicker so that they can then move on to a new experience. But supporting them in that journey, I think that kind of onboarding and exiting process and how you support them as a business is super important.
Really interesting point. I always remember your colleague Graham joins on the show probably 2 or 3 years ago, and a big phrase that I've quoted probably 2 or 3 times since is nobody wants to do a bad job. And in, you know, my 10 years in recruitment, I don't think I've ever seen anyone that wants to do a bad job, and it's sometimes just that wrong fit. Daniel, what's your take on this piece in terms of, I guess, kind of that point that I put forward to Martin in terms of hiring externally your management team or internally, and what have you done, and what have you done within your own business when building that team?
Yeah, I mean, we're a different level to Martin. We're about 16 employees, so we don't have a large senior management team, but we have 6 directors effectively. You know, we've got a marketing director, managing director, and finance director, and they've all come organically. So they've come in at different levels, and then over time they've moved to that level. So they've all got a vast experience in all areas in the business. But I think that's kind of come down to the speed of which we grew at, essentially. So, you know, in the space of 3 years, we tripled in size. So a lot of that experience was already in-house, because it's quite a niche industry where we are. So found that organically was the best fit for us at the moment. But obviously, as we get bigger and move into different markets, you know, the likelihood is we would have to also look elsewhere if we don't have the expertise in the business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Daniel, I'm going to stay with you for a tough question. Martin will be up next. Which is a song choice for our listeners? What has been your song choice?
So my song choice is Verve, Lucky Man.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch podcast, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I'm really, really enjoying the conversation this morning. So thank you so much to the three of you for joining us. If you are just tuning in, we're really talking about how to scale a business, but also at what point do you introduce a senior management team, and really things to consider around that. Martin, I'm keen to bring the conversation back to yourself, if that's okay, and really talk about the cloud cubed person, because you spoke about values and you spoke that your clients can really see how you work and who is one of your people. At what point did that come? What was that right in the business plan at the start? Is that something that's evolved over a period of time, or has it been more of a recent thing?
I think it's part of who I am, and I actually used to work for a big hyperscaler, whose initials may start with A and may end up with S, a big cloud provider, and they had 14 management principles, and management principles were things like disagree and commit, be kind, be respectful, customer orientation. And, you know, even though it sounded strange, they resonated with me massively because they were things I lived and breathed as part of my day and daily work ethic. We created 10 values within CloudCube that help us measure and actually guide people about being kind and respectful, being customer centric, making data driven decisions, those types of things. So we help. I guess, coach and develop people in the CloudCube way. We have lunch and learns, we have end of week messages, we have values of the month where we promote the values that we live and breathe. We put them inside people's performance reviews so that we can help people achieve those goals and live and breathe the CloudCube way. So that's really important. It was about an individual, but for me, Ben, it's about moving out of the way of the business and the business not being about Martin Sharkey, it being about the business entity itself, and making sure that that we just exhibit those types of behaviors as opposed to me telling everyone that this is the way we should operate.
No, really interesting point. And is at what point does that normally happen, Yaz? I'm keen to bring across to you, really, in terms of at what point is it important that the founder and the CEO and really kind of almost isn't about them anymore and really about that senior management team and the staff are able to build that culture and able to, I guess, run with the baton, to use that analogy?
Yeah, I guess, culture is instilled from the very beginning of a business, right? And I think you are what your people are, and I think it would naturally evolve with the types of people that you bring into the business. But I do think that it's the duty of the management team, whether that be the CEO, the founder, a group of people, to really keep revisiting the values, the behaviors, what the mission statement is of the organization, and really making sure that people are aligned to that. And like Martin touched on, whether that's through your one-to-ones, your personal development programs, your weekly, we have a weekly all-hands stand-up, which happens on a Monday afternoon. We also have company town halls where we all get together and we review kind of what the last quarter or, half year's been like. But what we also do is we go away for 3 days as a group once a year to really think about how we want to evolve the business, and we go back to what is our organizational purpose, what's our culture statement, and what are the values that we want to what are we embodying now, and do we still feel like they are we still acting with integrity, like are they still authentic to us? And if they're not, then really really drilling down into that. And I think people will know when it's authentic and when it's not, and what changes that we need to make, and everybody needs to be involved in that conversation to make it happen. We do that. We go away on kind of away days and reevaluate ourselves and the business, which is fun, very intense, but fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Daniel, what's your take on this piece?
Well, I mean, for me, you want to be handing over pretty much all responsibilities as soon as you've got the people in place that you want them to do that role. It is a hard transition, especially when you've been doing that role for a long time. But the sooner you can let go, the sooner you can focus working on the business, which is the crucial part, and going out and getting customers and just focusing on growing the business rather than operating it. So for me, I would always encourage to do it as quick as you can afford to do it. And that will allow you to probably drive the business faster than you being in the business and being all about you, essentially.
Absolutely. I think a common phrase that's used is imposter syndrome. And there's lots of other phrases that go around in terms of once you work for yourself, you're unemployable. And Martin, growing a business to the point you have in a relatively short period of time. And then I think one of the things that's really resonated already is that you've aimed to employ people that are 10 times better than you, your words. And how has that been difficult to hire people that have taken on the duties that you've done? And I guess what would be your advice to I guess kind of those listening right now that maybe are in the point where they're considering a senior management team. What is that, I guess, decision making process, and how are they likely to react?
Oh, what a difficult question, Ben.
Sorry.
So I guess the problem and the challenge that I've got is that I have been really lucky to have been involved in three of the largest migrations in UK government in the last 10 years. So I've been exposed to some pretty amazing programmes, massive diversity in terms of skills and development and people management and financial management and programme and planning control. So hiring someone who has that level of skill set is really, really difficult. Sometimes you feel like you're hunting for unicorns. So the easiest way to do that is to break it up into its component parts, to look at who, like I said at the beginning, look at people who are better at people management than you, look at people who are better at financial planning than you, look at people who are equivalent, given I'm a technologist, or if not better than you in the technology space. So I've really had to break it up in its component part. But you mentioned imposter syndrome at the start of that. And something I've always suffered with. I come from the neurodiverse community, having been recently diagnosed with ADHD, which I didn't realize, so at 47 years of age. But for me, I've always had imposter syndrome. And I know exactly how that feels. So whenever a senior leader comes into my business, I try and encourage and coach them not to feel like they're getting measured by me, given the experience that I've got. Maybe encourage them and grow into the role, because they are and they should be much better than I am in that capacity. But it's really just about making sure you've got confidence in yourself. You're coming in to do the job that's expected of you, not the one that's not expected of you, because too often we as growing startup companies, we expect people to be flexible and do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And sometimes we start measuring people on things that aren't within their scope of works. And that becomes a really toxic way to, address employees within the workforce. We have to measure people based on why we hired them, rather than the things that we've asked to do, which are peripheral things outside of their core work scope.
No, really, really, really interesting point, and I'm really keen to build on that, actually. But before that, I am going to ask you a song question, which may be your hardest question of today. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
I'm a very positive kind of person, so I like to bring a little bit of sunshine everywhere I go. So I'm going to choose Weather With You by Crowded House.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I'm following that great song chosen by Martin. We've been speaking with our three experts really around the topic of growth and rapid growth, but also some of those foundations that you put in place and things to consider, but also that point of introducing that senior management team. Yasmin, a question that I'm just really keen to build on is around this imposter syndrome piece, which Martin really articulated really well. There is what can you put in place other than the points that Martin touched on in terms of when bringing that senior management team into the business to, I guess, replace, in inverted commas, you the founder, or complement you the founder, to really give them that best chance of success?
I think feedback has got to be, and that goes both ways, I think is really important. I think it's super critical that they give you feedback on the things that you could be doing better, the things that you could be doing differently, and you being open to receiving that. But equally, the stuff that, you know, you giving them that feedback to, and them giving each other that feedback, that peer-to-peer kind of mentoring, coaching, that create, you know, we talked about culture earlier on in the conversation. I think it's all about creating those conditions where people are just supporting each other. And sometimes that feedback could be quite difficult. But I think if it's kind of embodied in that culture, then, you know, I think you'll always get tinges of imposter syndrome. I think it's quite natural for people to feel like that. But I think if you create the conditions where people are able to give and receive feedback in a really psychologically safe way and feel that they can trust their peers to give that to them, then that's a really great way for that imposter syndrome to kind of subside, because you stop focusing on the things that maybe you think you're doing wrong, but you're giving constructive ways of doing things a little bit differently or trying new things. And that's just a different way of looking at it.
Absolutely. Daniel, I know that your role has really, really changed in recent months and years in terms of your focus is very much on that innovation and that, I guess, kind of business strategy. How has that process been for you? And like, what would be your advice for people in that kind of similar position?
Well, I guess my journey into it was slightly different. So about 5 years ago, I was told I need to have a heart valve replacement. So I was going to be out of the business for about 3 months. So it gave me about 6 months time to plan for me not being around. And one of the key things that I was able to do was to process and write down pretty much everything that I did within the business and then start moving those items out to different key members of the team. So that by the time it got to the point where I wasn't going to be around for a couple of months, my role had pretty much in the business had completely been removed. And therefore I was able to focus on strategy when I came back and being able to just let the team run the business day to day. So for me, I think that was a blessing in disguise that I was almost forced into a position where I wasn't going to be around. And it makes you realize that if you're not in the business and not around the business, does the business still work? And as long as it does, and you're able to install the confidence in the team members to carry out the roles that you take part in, then you've got the biggest chance of success, because the biggest chance of failure comes from when you remove yourself from the business. If you're unable to bring people in that are able to meet the standards or keep the standards that you were driving that business forward at, in my opinion, obviously.
No, absolutely. A big thing from last week's show, which was all about mergers, acquisitions, exiting your business. And actually, the biggest thing is what happens with your business without you in it. Yasmin, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think I was just going to add that I think Daniel just picked up on a really important point there around like codifying process. I think if you're a founder-led organization and the reliance is ultimately with you, I think codifying process and that succession planning piece is super important. And that's really key to scalability. You'll always remain a founder-led or a very small organization if you don't put those processes in place to make sure that if anything were to happen to you, that the business could continue. And so I do think like mitigating risk through those two things is really important if you're on that growth trajectory. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Martin, as you've touched on throughout the show, you guys have introduced that management team, but also you've worked on some really big projects within big businesses. How key is process, and do the people define the process, or does the process look after itself? And it might be something, Yaz, you want to jump back in on as well.
So process is really, really important. I guess it's whether you have the time as a scaling business to define all of the processes, because it can be process heavy defining the process itself. But if you don't have the process in place, you have a higher likelihood of failing, and that's the biggest challenge that you got. And for me, reputation is everything. Without reputation, you don't have a brand, and that's just the reality of it. So we have a thing called the Digital Acceleration Framework that we're using within Cloud Cube to help us define the standards and the processes by which we engage with our customers. And that's really good. It keeps everyone in alignment with the same types of standards, same methodology within the business as well. But again, these things do drift. So, you know, having the checks and balances in place to make sure people are still doing things the way that you expect them to do it. Because like I said, the reputation is everything. And as a founder that hasn't fully separated themselves from a business, it always feels a little bit personal that the reputational failure will be your own personal failure. So I think that's, you know, Daniel mentioned a second ago about taking yourself out of the way of the business. And I mentioned that earlier. That is one of the most difficult things as a founder to do. Separating yourself, especially when you're so emotionally connected to the little baby that you created and nurtured into existence. And then you want it to go off into the big wild world and be managed by someone else. So, yeah, it's a real dichotomy in itself.
No, absolutely. And let's just go back to this management team. So the big phrase, the senior management team. And this is a question that could be for any of you, and maybe all three of you might like to give your views on it. How do you define what comes first in terms of that senior management team? I think that as humans, I think it's very, very common with, I guess, my recruitment agency owner hat on. It's very common that businesses will hire what's perceived as the most important role or maybe what they least enjoy doing. But I also think that there's value in almost looking at what role would you be employed to do in your own business. But yeah, at what point do you look at, I guess, that first person on the senior management team, and how do you define, I guess, kind of what that role looks like? A question of free for all there.
With myself, I guess it's a general manager / managing director role, because that is the role that I was heavily involved with. Once that position was filled, enabled me to grow the business or go out and get new customers or change our current processes. So for me, fulfilling that role as a small company, when you can get someone to look after that day-to-day operations of the business, would be the first hire. And then once you've got that in place, you can then, you know, bring in someone who's going to look after getting new business, maybe marketing director, and then controlling the finances, etc.
What's your take, Yaz?
I think, I guess it depends on the size of the business, but I do think having a really, sounds really deep, but having a really in-depth kind of intro look at yourself and kind of looking at where maybe the single points of failure lie in you, and like, what are you missing? Like, what partner or person do you need to bring on board to support yourself? Where are the areas that you either don't get joy from, you don't enjoy doing, or if you had somebody in that role, would it give you the freedom to do other things that you are really good at, and that's where your strengths lie? So I do think that kind of analysis of what your strengths are as a leader, and then what can you do to support yourself, and that could be anything for anyone. I do think having that overall business management it's super important, but I do think that, you know, you could equally be really good at that side of the business but be really terrible at managing the finances of the organization. So I think it's really looking about where your weak points are.
Well, what about yourself, Martin? What's your take on this?
I think the Yaz's point is a little bit of introspection and then figuring out how you're going to eat the elephant. So for me, it's really about breaking it down into the smaller chunks, figuring out the things that are causing you to do 20-hour days, and then figuring out how you can dissect that and look and say, actually, most of my time is spent here. So is there a need for me to go and look at some kind of support I can get? Our model actually was to take advantage of fractional support. So we brought fractional CXOs in to begin with. So we actually still have a fractional chief finance officer who works for us, but that's a very safe bet. It's a low risk option. It's a low investment option as well. But what it does is it gets skills within the business. It gets the strategy and strategic mindset inside the business as well. It helps you understand whether, do we actually need that role? And do we need to switch the tap on a little bit harder, or do we need to turn the tap off a little bit less? And I think that's a really useful thing for anyone at scale and is looking at the fractional model. You can get fractional CTOs, you can get fractional CFOs, you can get fractional chief marketing officers. There's lots and lots of capacity within the market. All you need to do is go and look for it and look for someone who's used it before. There's a lot of organizations out there that are really credible. So for me, Ben, it was just really about trying to break the problem into its component parts, understand the one that was causing most pain in the business that was preventing me from scaling, and then looking at how we could fulfill that role.
No, really, really good advice. Really, really good advice. I do feel like a bit of a fraudster with my final section, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because you've been given top tips all show. But one of the things we do like to do on the show is almost like end on a parting tip. And it might be something that you've already, a point that you've already made today, or one of your co-guests have made today, or it may be something that I've missed and not asked about. So I guess as a parting tip, whether it be around scaling the business or introducing a senior management team, what would be your takeaway tip? And I'll start with you, Daniel.
Good question. I think mine would be, you have to be able to hire before you can afford to. So you have to take that gamble and be confident in the fact that you're going to get more business in and bring that person in before you can afford to. That would be my tip.
Amazing. Really good one. Yaz, what would be your takeaway tip?
I think Martin touched on it earlier, but the fact that ultimately the brand relies on its reputation, and you want people that you're bringing into the business to really buy into the brand too, to really own that mission and the values of the organization that they're joining. So I think unless you get the right people that have bought into that, it's that scale is just not going to happen. So yeah,
I think amazing. And last but certainly not least, Martin.
I think one of the things as a startup that we probably are all guilty of is hiring without the right types of contracts in place, because the contracts define the services that the individual is going to provide for you. So too often we've had our fingers burnt. So the lesson we've learned the last 6 months is making sure your contracts are really robust. There's a clear set of objectives that they are going to be measured against within that contract, and don't have loose contracts. So I would say even get some advice from a law firm, an employment lawyer, making sure that you understand what that is, because the last thing you want to do is bring in an employee, then fail, and then you're not really being able to measure how they feel because you've just had a really loose conversation with them. So that's one tip I would have, and I'm sure there's lots of people out there that being that have hired without having proper contracts in place.
No, really, really good point. Really, really good point. I rarely do this, but I am going to jump in with one tip. Sorry, everyone. I think as my passing tip, I think it's really, really key when hiring senior management team, or indeed any employee, is about that, I guess, agreed or aligned aspirations. The biggest reason we see individuals leave organization is because of disparity in terms of what are those aspirations? What are you looking for? Where do the values differ? So passing note. But it's not about me, it's about my three guests. And we are at the end of the show. So thank you so much to the three of you for spending your time and adding such value to the contribution to the discussion as well. So if you are just tuning in, we've had Martin Sharkey of Cloud Cubed, we've had Daniel O'Sullivan of the Experience Specialist Group, and we've had Yaz Biggs of Profitability. Thank you so much to the three of you for your time and contribution. Next week, we are going to be back with three brand new guests, and we're going to be discussing a brand new topic impacting on local businesses. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version, which is available on all your favourite podcast platforms and is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format so you can see my lovely guests, which is available on the Get Radio Facebook page and indeed the website every Tuesday. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, whatever you're doing, and I will see you next week.